This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana and Xiao Ning. Let's get a quick update on how the bursa is looking like at 9:19 this morning.
Still in the red, the index is actually down 0.3, is currently 1550.
Okay, and we're turning our attention to the banking sector because last year there were some significant policy announcements in the banking sector which can have an impact on earnings, including Cukai Makmur and the last of the loan moratoriums which was introduced in July under the Pemulih Fiscal Package. At the same time, the sector is ripe for disruption with Bank Negara expected to announce the 5 digital bank licensee winners soon. So what does this mean for the listed banks and can we expect earnings growth in 2022 since the economy has reopened? To guide us, we speak to Clement Chua, senior analyst at Kenanga Group. Clement, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us. Now, loans growth picked up momentum to 4.3% in November 2021, which was higher than expectations. But was this across all segments?
So to answer this, both household and business loans, they did overperform our initial expectations. But this is more to do with business loans than others. But that being said, it's a little bit mixed with the business front because if we look at the numbers closely, we can see that it's more coming towards injection towards working capital. And this is understandable because a lot of the existing businesses, they do need to ramp up operations in preparation for the better business environment that we are seeing with the economic reopening. But the ones that probably fell behind a little bit were construction works because, as we all know, COVID restrictions did do a number on that. And at this moment, we are also seeing a bit of an overhang in terms of high-rise property project. But overall, yes, we are seeing numbers to be quite favorable. And this could close quite nicely in December as well.
With that, what are your expectations for loans growth this year? And what is that view premised on?
So we believe that loans growth would be at least 5% in 2022. This is reasonable, in line with our in-house GDP forecast of 5.5 to 6% at this moment. Of course, this is unless we experience an unexpected worsening of COVID in the country. But we are banking on the current climate to be more economically friendly. And with that, the ones that are expected to be the strongest performer this year will be the SME segment, because as we all know, this is the segment that have lost the most ground during the last 2 years because of the MCOs and the lockdowns. And we are hoping that they do make the strongest comeback, and that would possibly lead to us seeing better loan growth within the year.
As almost all moratoriums have come to an end, should we be worried about asset quality in 2022? Will we see an uptick in non-performing loans and a rise in provisions by the banks in tandem?
I do think we will be actually experiencing a better time in 2022. So I guess on the concern that the lapse of the moratorium would affect asset quality, it's probably a bit overplayed in my opinion, because if we just compare the 2021 moratorium against the ones in 2020, a lot of the troubled accounts, they do lack the benefit of a more sustainable economic environment, which we're in right now, which will allow for more effective rehabilitation. And also, I guess it's interesting to be reminded that during the 2021 moratorium, a lot of the applicants actually do come from the T20 population. And to some banks, it makes up about 50% of the applicants. And this has more to do with these customers trying to get more cash liquidity during the uncertain period of last year's second half. But that being said, this group is not expected to be a major credit risk. So any worsening of asset quality when the moratorium lapses is probably something that could be a bit overstated looking at things right now.
Clement, on Friday, we heard news that UOB is buying Citibank's consumer banking assets in Malaysia, Thailand, Indonesia and Vietnam for USD $3.6 billion. Is this a precursor of consolidation in the banking sector? Where might we see some activity?
So I think we have already started to see quite a lot of consolidation, at least during the last year, more of insurances, which is still under the financial service bracket. But I believe if we look at the broader picture, you know, consolidation is inevitable in this day and age, especially when digitalizing operations is a priority to extend the viability of a business. And this could possibly be aggravated when we do see an injection of up to 5 new digital banks this year, which is what Bank Negara will be awarding this quarter itself. And what this would do is it could possibly increase the pace in the race for greater efficiency, and meaning to say that we'll need to find more ways to improve our economies of scale and maybe to form new synergies. There would be a suspect that the ones who would fall behind in this race are likely the ones who would be absorbed in by the better performing players just for their assets. And yeah, this is possibly one of the key things that we could be seeing maybe in the next few years within the banking space.
Meanwhile, everyone's watching with anticipation who will win the digital banking license. Will the upcoming 5 new digital banks pose any threats to the incumbent banks? And what do you think they'll do to gain market share?
So at this moment, I don't think there will be a threat to the conventional banks because e-micro loans is not really a big mix of the conventional banking space at this moment. As they do build up on that, maybe eventually when they do mature, Bank Negara has given them a phase of 3 to 5 years. I think the stronger participants within the space, they could be elevated from this period and then they would probably start to give financing products towards maybe higher purchase agreements or some larger personal loan size products. But in the immediate term, because even though they are not competing in terms of loans, as a bank, they will still need to secure their own source of funds. So what that would mean is that they would probably have to introduce some very competitively aggressive deposit products. This could make it a little bit more interesting in terms of the space for deposits, because the only other way that we could incentivize customers to deposit between banks is at this moment interest rates. And how aggressive the 5 players will be, I think that remains to be seen. But it would be something that could capture the conventional bank's attention, I believe. I do think to prove the use case of digital banks, you do need to lean towards players who have an existing captive user base. So that would mean the likes of Grab and Boost. When you already have a lot of existing users, it will be possibly easier to market or at least introduce these new digital banking products. Whereas some of the other players who are probably not too experienced, they may have much difficult road ahead of them in terms of being sustainable, because the act of balance between making the business operational and as well as marketing, the balance would probably be a bit more difficult to achieve. But that's my take on digital banks, at least the near-term impact of it.
So, Clement, with that, what is your call on the sector, your top picks and why?
Currently, I'm neutral. As we all know, the banks have been rallying over the past few trading days. And I do think the sentiment is elevated on the hopes that we are seeing that the better economic recovery and also expectations of rate hikes, which would be a boon in the long term for the banks. But conservatives may be wary of possible worsening of COVID with the Omicron variant, what this would mean to further movement restrictions within the country. So my neutral ground on this is really to be balanced between better economic environment as well as possible threats to how COVID may worsen within the country. So I do like Alliance Bank at this moment as one of the prime benefactors of economic reopening. To the story that SMEs would be one of the biggest performers during the year, Alliance Bank, they do have the largest proportion of SMEs accounts in their books. And I guess they have done well over the last few quarters as well. They are comparable to the larger cap banks in terms of dividends and ROEs. And I also do like RHB Bank. It's more of a twist in sentiment in their case because they are the only listed conventional bank that is participating in this digital banking license bid. And we all know they are in a joint bid with Axiata Digital and thereby giving them access to Boost. Being a very prominent player in the e-wallet scene within the country, I think it really plays well with Bank Negara's mandate to increase the rate of adoption of digital banks. So I do think that RHB will benefit from this if they do win the digital banking award from Bank Negara.
Clement, thanks very much for speaking to us. That was Clement Chua of Kenanga Group sharing his views on how the banking sector will do this year.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a much better year, right? After all, banks are seen as a barometer of the economy. And since we have almost reopened every sector, bank loans growth should improve. And despite, I think, the fact that I think analysts are expecting at least one or two rate hikes from Bank Negara, currently OPR is at 1.75%, actually, we will probably see an expansion of net interest margins. Interest rate changes are good for banks.
That's right. And of course, we are all watching to see who will win the digital banking license. As Clement said, RHB is quite favored in this position.
Yes.
With their
joint venture.
There we go. Joint venture with Axiata.
Yeah, but the other bank he likes is Alliance Bank.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.